Broadcasting live from our Westlake studios, overlooking the great city of Austin, and helping you maneuver through this waning dystopia, it's episode number 338 of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Coming up this hour at 12:45, the Crap Bag says happy birthday to a couple of goats. At 12:30, we're talking NFL, including the Bucks canceling Gruden. In a mere minutes, we begin looking ahead to the Longhorns matchup with Oklahoma State. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is a Waxahachie native and level-headed Aggie who may speak your death into existence if he doesn't like you. It's Chad Hastings.
You damn right. Hope everybody's having a good Wednesday. We hit hump day. If you're a Longhorn fan and you haven't totally, you know, washed it all away from Saturday, this is probably the day to do that, figure it out. Trey, when you have one of those losses to Oklahoma as a Longhorn fan, how long does it take for you? Because in the old rivalry that will come back one day that you and I love, when it comes back, you usually get, you got so much time to process it. Unless your team was headed to the big, the conference title game, you got a lot of time to process that. There wasn't a game right away. But for you, your biggest rival's right in the middle of the season, and you got to get cranked back up. So how long has it taken you? Are you done? You over it? Have you washed away 55-48 yet?
Sunday morning.
Okay. So you don't even need the full day.
See, I don't hold on to these things, though. Like, even with the national championship, God, this is, of all the things that I say that tick Longhorn fans off, Chad, this may be one of the most egregious offenses here.
Here we go.
Even with the national championship, I was over that 2 days later.
What?
Life goes on, man.
I know that, but you got to let that one linger a little, don't you?
Yeah, life goes on. Like, is it nice that they won the national championship? Absolutely. Do I think about it from time to time and get happy? Yeah. But is it making that big an impact on my life in terms of my mood?
I mean, I don't need you to write Vince Young poetry for the next 5 days, but I'd have hung on to that one for a while.
Never been my style. I let go of things fast. In life and in my sports life, too.
I mean, I know what you mean overall. Like, somebody asked me yesterday, hey, man, you still riding a high? And I was like, huh? Like, oh, you still, you know.
It took you a second to figure it out.
What does he mean? And I believe they were directly referencing A&M's win. But for me, the football weekend as a whole was pretty good. I got two NFL teams that both won, and I thought they would. And I've got a college team that I didn't think was going to win that did. So, that was cool. But I'm with you. I usually don't let it simmer one way or the other too much. I don't want to let it affect my weekend. I used to watch my dad do that. He'll still do it. A&M will lose a game he didn't expect him to lose, or the Cowboys will look sluggish and lose, and he'd just get down for the rest of the weekend and for the next couple days. I'm like, you're letting that mess with your day?
I used to be the worst at that when I was a kid. A Texas loss in the Cotton Bowl, one that I was usually attending in person after the third grade, starting in the third grade, that would sit with me for a couple of weeks. And eventually you realize that's just not a very good attitude to have with things.
Yep.
And again, it's not just with sports. It's with so many different things in life. And that's not to say that you can't feel emotions over the good and the bad, but dwelling on those things too long one way or the other is only detrimental to what comes next.
Somebody, as I was saying it and as I was getting into the show, texted us on the Specs text line, 337-3776. Chad, shush, over it. Time to think of OSU, and it is probably time to think of them if you haven't. The players, I'm assuming, have been thinking of them since Sunday.
Well, and look, I've become a broken record with this, but one of the reasons why I am a believer in what Steve Sarkisian is doing here is because he does preach that attitude. And it's not just cliched coach speak, him talking about getting ready for that next thing. Like, he seems to walk the talk as well, and is really starting to get that into the heads of his players. And we saw it happen once already with a pretty embarrassing Arkansas loss where, yeah, the competition wasn't great after that, but they did look like a focused football team. And I'd like to believe that we will see that again this Saturday. Now, the big difference between the last time and this time is the opponent is much better this time around.
Yeah.
Oklahoma State is legit this year. A team built on a stout physical defense and a really good rushing attack. And yeah, even though the veteran signal caller has his hits and misses and has been very inconsistent throughout his career, it is still one of the more veteran guys in this conference under center. So this is a big-time challenge to the idea that Steve Sarkisian can have his team ready to bounce back from disappointment the very next week.
So back to this three-headed monster that I've been thinking about in terms of Sarkisian. The rest of the conference has its challenges. I get it. But to me, these three guys in a row that he's facing are important. And while you focus in on Lincoln Riley, who he definitely out-dueled for a big hunk of that game, but then when it mattered, he did not. It's those other two guys that are also important to me. He got the win over Gary. He's going to need to consistently do that. And then this is the offense versus offensive mind one that I'm really interested to see how it plays out. Because, Trey, I think both of these guys have developed a reputation. Sark's got it in a short time at Texas, and maybe other times if we talk to Washington or USC fans, we know Gundy's got it, where sometimes these guys don't finish well.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that fourth quarter gets after them a little bit, and they aren't able to, you know, keep the foot on the neck and really put things away. A lot of one score games on Gundy's ledger, and Sark just played his first two one score games at Texas, and he is 1-1 now. And this game has been one score. Did I hear Jeff Howe say this right? The last four, at least, if not six, have been one-score games.
And Oklahoma State under Mike Gundy has had a ton of success here in Austin, too, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Look, it's a fair inquiry based on the fact that Sark's his career speaks to a couple of things. One, his team's not being ready to go all the time on the road, and then also them not being great against ranked competition. This game is at home, fortunately, but it is against a ranked opponent, an opponent that, as a matter of fact, is ranked in the top 15 and still undefeated on the year.
Yeah, I think that ranked record for him now goes to 11-21 as
right.
a head coach.
So it's two losses for every win.
Mm-hmm. And then one score games, it's 16-13 now for Sark as a head coach in terms of one score games. So we'll see what this is like, but you said it. The fact that Oklahoma State, you mentioned their defense first, that is weird. The fact that you do not mention stud receivers right away, that is weird. But Gundy told us at Big 12 Media Days he didn't have one. And he's right.
Yeah.
He knew it. He was honest with us.
That's right.
And so I'm looking at their schedule. This is amazing. If you haven't been following Oklahoma State, and let's be honest, why would you? Other than the Boise game before conference, you weren't going to watch them play Missouri State or Tulsa.
I thought the Kansas State game was going to be more interesting than it was.
I watched a little bit of that and a little bit of Baylor. Mm-hmm. The last two games I've seen a little bit of. But I'll admit I haven't watched them play a whole game. I watched, that's a lie. I watched about half the Boise game.
And you know what? In fairness, because of what Baylor did to Iowa State in this last weekend to West Virginia, that's a decent win for them right now.
Yes, it is. I agree. Yeah, because Baylor laid West Virginia out in Waco last weekend. That was impressive. So, but of all the games they've played, only one team in all five games has scored 30, and it was them against Kansas State. Trey, everything else is low score. Not only are they holding teams to low scores, they're not getting up into the 30s. And that's weird to me about a Mike Gundy team.
As much has been made about the savvy hires Gundy has made in terms of bringing offensive coordinators in, and there have been some really good ones, obviously, you cannot underestimate just how big a hire it was to bring Jim Knowles in to fix that defense. Because that side of the ball historically has been a problem for Mike Gundy coached teams. And now, in a way, it's the opposite. But considering how good they're running the football this year, those two things, a really stout physical defense and a good rushing attack, they play very well together. Even in this pass-happy era of football, if you have those two things rolling along, you're going to win a lot of games as a result, because it means that you're going to hold the opponents down, especially when you're bend don't break like what Oklahoma State is. And you're also going to control the football, to control the clock, to keep that defense fresh throughout the course of a game. We've seen them against a couple different opponents this year, lesser opponents too early in the season, that non-conference schedule, where it was close going late into the third quarter, into the fourth quarter, but Oklahoma State just wore those teams down. And as a result, they end up winning going away. It looks like a blowout victory for them, but it was a much closer game up to a certain point.
Here's what they've given up so far. 16, 23, 20, 20, and 14.
Wow.
I think the number one goal for Sark, when you're just thinking about the big picture of things, I think 30 needs to be Texas's goal.
That's the number I was just thinking as you started to say
that. You got to get into that range. If Gundy can keep this thing in the 20s, That's his kind of I can't believe I just said that out loud. But that's what he wants. He wants that kind of game because now it becomes a pattern. Because you're right. Early on, we were like, wait a minute. Did they play Missouri State 23-16?
Mm-hmm.
But the difference with this team is they feel comfortable in that world. Are you comfortable winning 28-23 against Tulsa? Yeah, they were. They were, and they were perfectly comfortable beating Baylor 24-14.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to kind of look at that. Another great stat I heard, and Rod did a great job in the Rod's rant I heard yesterday about 5:30, breaking them down. You can check it out at hornfm.com. But he pointed out, Trey, that in the Baylor game, they threw three picks. Spencer Sanders threw three picks. The Oklahoma State defense answered with three and out three times.
That's impressive.
That's big time.
Yes, it is.
So they are finding ways to win. They're finding ways to win ugly. It is a team to pay attention to, obviously. And instead of us going over all these different receivers, we're going to tell you about a running back this week named Jaylen Warren. This is one of those that by the end of the year, by the end of this game, into Saturday, Texas fans might wish they had played this game early in September before Gundy figured some things out because he had no weapons to start the year.
Mm-hmm.
And the weapon he thought he had, Trey, is banged up in L.D. Brown.
Well, I didn't even realize L.D. Brown was banged up. I didn't see their last game. He was running decently prior to that.
He's a little banged up now. He's not on this depth chart for this week. It's just Jaylen Warren and Dominic Richardson listed.
What is Richardson?
Dominic is a sophomore.
Okay.
And then Jaylen Warren is the transfer senior from, I believe, Utah State. He's a Salt Lake City kid. So he's a transfer there, and he started to get more and more of those carries. So look for him. He wears number 7. You know Spencer Sanders. You've seen him before, but they really haven't found a big-time receiver yet. So they want to get Texas in a rock fight. They want to get Texas in a defensive struggle. They want to get them frustrated because they can't move the ball and try to capitalize on little moments. This is, I don't know how to even describe, it's almost like Kansas State. When Bill Snyder was at his best, that feels like how Oklahoma State wants to beat people.
Yeah, there is a little bit of that to what's going on. I don't know what their special teams are, but if you throw a really good special teams element in, then it is true on Bill Snyder, Kansas State from back in the day.
Here's a stat to look for. I'm always watching this stat anyway, but Texas is really good in third down conversion nationally. They're 8th in the country, 52% of third downs. Third down defense, I just mentioned what they did against Baylor. Third down defense for Oklahoma State, 14th in the country. They've given up right at 30%. So Texas is a little over 5 out of every 10 we convert. Oklahoma State is, 7 out of every 10 we send you to the bench. So let's see what that looks like.
To Steve Sarkisian's point from Monday, I wonder what the first down percentages or yardages given up or gotten in the Longhorns case are for each of those sides of the ball.
That's a good
question.
Wonder
if Oklahoma State is really good on first down to where they're forcing more third and long situations. Seems like that would be the case, but you don't want to make any assumptions there. But to Steve Sarkisian's point on Monday and something that he's preached all year long, you have to win first down to have a chance to either score points if you're on offense or to keep the opposition from driving the football down the field on defense.
I will I'll look that up for you during a break today. But people, let us know what you think on the Specs text line about Oklahoma State. Have you watched them play at all? Are you concerned at all? Somebody says, OSU sucks, Texas versus Oklahoma in the Big 12 championship.
I hope.
That's what you got to hope. That is what you got to hope.
But I'm also understanding that this Texas football team is more flawed on defense than any of us thought would happen right now.
Yeah.
And there aren't any obvious answers on that side of the ball, specifically along the defensive line. They just look weaker than their opponents far too often when their opponents are even okay on the offensive line. And Oklahoma State's offensive line was below average this year. They looked like world beaters at times this last Saturday. And the opponents that Texas has the rest of the way, many of them are stout on the offensive line, and they like running the football. It's what they're better at than anything else. And so Texas is going to have to figure something out in that regard. They cannot allow Oklahoma to happen again on the ground in terms of giving up. I know they gave up over 300. Even giving up 200 yards in a game is not okay. You're setting yourself up for failure there if that happens.
Over 330 in those two games? Isn't that what they gave up?
Right.
That is ugly, dude. I mean, as a defensive guy football-wise, I was raised around teams that played really good defense. The idea of giving up 150 rushing is not good to me. Like, that gives me a bit of a sour taste in my mouth. But now you're going to go up to 250. You're almost to 350 on the ground.
Oklahoma State runs the ball well. Baylor runs the ball well. Kansas State is looking to play a physical brand of football on the ground. Now, they will find creative ways to get Deuce Vaughn the ball if you're stopping the run, but that is their MO. Iowa State, that's their MO as well. With Breece Hall, they've got another talented ball carrier, and we realize they don't want to put too much on Brock Purdy's shoulders at this point.
When West Virginia's running well, what do they do?
Letty Brown is another talented running back in this conference. So Texas has to find answers on that side of the ball.
Yeah, it's a great test right away after what you just saw. We will give Sark and Texas credit for the way they bounced back after Arkansas. But, Trey, we can make the argument that what Arkansas revealed, Rice, Texas Tech, and TCU were just not going to test you on. You know, it's like you failed a certain thing, but then the next three teams weren't really going to test you
well,
there.
Well, and TCU did test them a little bit like that, and TCU passed that test, too. They just didn't run it enough.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, Texas Tech had bits of success on the ground, but they also were having to play in comeback mode, and Columbia was making some decent plays and getting the football down the field at times. But, yeah, it's no longer an option to not stop the run, because if you don't do that, you are going to lose at least two games, if not more, the rest of the way.
Let us know what you think of Texas and Oklahoma State. It is another morning kick, 11 o'clock for Texas and Oklahoma State. There have been pretty good turnouts, pretty good energy for those early kicks. I do think, after watching it from street level, Trey, I think the Bevo Boulevard idea definitely helps with 11 a.m. kicks. Like, early on, when we get started at 7:30, you can make ghost town jokes, but way earlier than it used to be, the energy does start to pick up a little bit. Now, I'm interested to see, after losing to OU, where does that energy sit? If they'd have beaten OU, especially if they blew them out, I think there'd be a lot of energy early on. Let's see, when do people show up at Bevo Boulevard? Is there a little, you know, is there a little spark in Saturday morning or not?
I've talked to a couple of people that are having trouble filling their seats this weekend.
Really?
Which is a bit concerning, and I will say this also. The Texas crowd, for what I've seen out of Texas crowds in the Cotton Bowl, 28 out of the last 30 years, it wasn't a very good crowd on Saturday. It started with them not realizing that they were booing Texas players coming out of the locker room in pregame, the four captains or whatever who were going to take part in the coin toss. They didn't realize that Texas was the home team and wearing the orange jersey. They started booing these guys when they walked on the field. Eventually, they realized it and started cheering them. But there was a lack of awareness out of the Texas contingent in that game that was bothersome early on that I thought reared its head at times throughout the course of the game as well. And having attended a couple of Texas games in person this year at DKR, I don't know. I felt the 11 o'clock crowd, the crowd not being in it as much as they probably should be with given situations, especially when Texas is playing defense and you want to get louder, even when it's not an obvious third down situation.
You felt a little flatness in an 11.
I felt a little bit of flatness, and I get that. Look, I do. I'm not as inclined to cheer whenever I'm watching something at 11:30 in the morning.
It's human nature. Just covering the game like we do, I'm hoping Texas wins this game because I think deep down that might get them some kind of prime time or at least afternoon kick on the next one.
And I understand Drew Martin and CDC have given us an answer as to why those south end zone seats aren't filled, because people want to be standing on the field. I get that. We need to come up with a different solution there. That's a bad look for that new section of DKR to have those seats routinely empty.
The other thing to think about is I got some messaging in the last day or so. UT wants to get the word out about tickets for the rest of the year, and they're trying to sell, you know, mini plans for these last three games, Trey. Think about the last three home games, this one and the two Kansas teams. And one of those games is already set as an 11 a.m. kick Friday after Thanksgiving. And the one in the middle that's not set is Kansas. So they want everybody to go to texassports.com/tickets and get your opportunities there. They also want you to know the volleyball team's pretty damn good. And they've got Thursday and Friday matches, both at 7 o'clock this week.
I need to take my kids to Gregory for some volleyball.
Yes, you do.
That looks like such a fun environment every time I tune in on LHN.
Apparently they're 13-0 already.
Oh, they're killing teams.
They're busting people up.
They've had good competition come in, and they're still waxing them, too.
Texas TCU is coming up in volleyball this week. So that's the kind of energy they want to develop in the stands this week. Let us know if you are excited about the game. What do you think? This text says, I'm very concerned. Texas has lost to teams with good defenses. Moreover, OSU's a good run team. They will plan to run down Texas' defensive throat. That is from Chan. We appreciate the text. See, I don't know if that's how I would define Oklahoma. They have found a running back they like, but Trey, I do not know if this is truly a running team. I don't think this is a, you know, Tatum Bell or name any one of those running backs from through the years where you go, oh my God, they're going to give him the ball 30, 40 times and he may destroy it. I don't really know if that's what this offense is right now.
Justice Hill, yeah. I mean, they do split the carries up just a little bit more, but you cannot sleep on Warren. I'm glad if LD Brown is not going to be playing in the game on Saturday. That's a good thing for the Longhorns. It's one less weapon they're having to worry about.
Yeah, I believe that is true. And again, he's not on the depth chart. Maybe he'll be able to go by the time the game starts, but not on the depth chart that I printed out today. A lot more talk on that game coming, obviously. Up next, let's go to the NFL. Week 6 is coming with some good games and the latest on Jon Gruden and the investigation that got Jon Gruden in trouble. Even though it had nothing to do with Jon Gruden. We'll try to get you the latest on all of that. And when is canceling going too far? Yeah, that hit Chucky too. We'll talk about it on the horn.
Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey.
I should know it, Trey, but I do not. What is this?
That's a bit surprising. This is The Strokes, Someday, the name of the song, and it is a part of today's random indie mix that we'll be playing on the show.
Ah, random indie. All right. Well, indie rock or indie anything?
Based on the artists that I'm seeing so far, I'm going indie rock.
Indie rock is what we're guessing. All right, we'll start with The Strokes, and we hope you are having a good Wednesday. Somebody is texting in on the Specs text line, 337-3776. I'm just now getting over last week's loss. Win that OU game and feel around the program's possibility is so much different. Now it just feels like another ho-hum year. I still trust Sark. But, man, what could have been? Longhorn fans still hanging on to it, Trey, on a Wednesday.
It can't be binary, either national championship or bust in year one of a new coaching regime. Your goals are still in front of you right now, which does include making two and potentially winning a Big 12 championship. But you have to get your ish together right now. Because another loss, that may be it for you. In terms of the Big 12 championship thing.
Right, then the season becomes totally different.
Right.
You're right, yeah. Because obviously you are about to play a team that is undefeated and a team that will host Oklahoma at the end of the year. So this is a game that's really important for you to get for a lot of reasons. By the way, if you want to get to the game and you don't have tickets, Kevin and Rod have an opportunity for you tomorrow out at Randall's in Westlake Village. So Randall's on Bee Caves. Swing on by, say hello. Those Randall's tickets are available every home week for lucky listeners. Might even get a little VIP upgrade. Be sure to ask the guys about that. All the details are at hornfm.com. All right, so we've got not only college football, but a lot of pro football on tap. You got week 6 coming up in the NFL with some good matchups. In fact, while we only have 2 ranked matchups in college football, we have 5 matchups in the NFL of winning football teams.
Oh, wow.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
You got Green Bay at Chicago. I know I just kind of lessened it for you. I shouldn't have started with that one. My bad. But technically, Chicago is 3-2, so we got to give them a little love. We've got the Chargers-Baltimore game, which is a great 4-1 matchup.
I dig that one.
That one's at Baltimore. 3 o'clock kick for Arizona at Cleveland. Let's see if Arizona can go on the road and stay 6-0. That'd be impressive.
Yeah, that game at Cleveland, I think, makes it more interesting for sure.
And the game that John Gruden was going to coach, the Raiders at Denver, is a 3-2, 3-2 matchup. The other one is Monday night when Buffalo plays at Tennessee. If you're a Cowboys fan, you probably know that you are at New England. And, Trey, let's see if the Cowboys can handle their business. I wouldn't have called it that kind of game earlier in the season, but now that we've seen kind of where New England is, the injuries they're dealing with and all of that, this is one the Cowboys are supposed to go handle on the road. Can they do it?
Against a rookie quarterback, too.
Uh-huh.
And I fully expect, I don't know if Diggs' streak will continue, but I expect them to come up with a turnover or two as part of that game. Dallas should win that one going away.
9 straight with 2 or more. That's an amazing run.
Mm-hmm.
That's just incredible. Because you can't go into a game thinking you're going to create turnovers. I know defensive coordinators like to say it. You can't honestly go into a game saying, well, we're going to get 2 turnovers today. You can't.
No.
It's just, yeah, but the fact that they've done that is really impressive. So yesterday we talked about the John Gruden story, that Gruden resigned and that the investigation, you know, into the Washington team ends up with Gruden being ultimately feeling like he needed to resign. There's a lot of stuff swirling there. So, A, keep your eye on the actual investigation, Trey, I think is what I would tell everybody. It almost feels like the NFL wants John Gruden to be the thing you focus on while the magician is making everything disappear. Because there are let's make sure we understand, over right around 650,000 emails that they confiscated. And yesterday, the lawyers for the accusers in that story in Washington that are saying it was a horrible work environment and mm-hmm. they were, you know, harassment and all this different stuff, the lawyers for those folks are saying, hey, why is the only person that's been called to responsibility here been the Raiders head coach? That's not what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
So keep your eye on the actual investigation. Also, Damaris Smith and the PA in the NFL have said, hey, we'd like you to release all those emails because we think this is about a lot more than John Gruden. And there's starting to be discussions in the NFL that maybe Roger Goodell is protecting his buddy Dan Snyder.
Oh, well, that's been going on for a long time, so that wouldn't be surprising at all.
And that's also the discussion around the Patriots story. Remember that? When he was protecting his buddy Robert Kraft?
Yeah.
Like when they destroyed all those tapes and didn't put them out to anybody?
Mm-hmm.
The Spygate tapes? Yeah, all that stuff.
There has to be more there. And I feel like when it's all said and done, John Gruden will be one of several who end up taking a fall based on how they like to talk about things behind the scenes.
Yeah, it's a weird story. We mentioned some of it yesterday, but those emails that got him in trouble, he's in an email group with not only Bruce Allen, but one of the co-founders of Hooters and the dude that started PDQ Chicken Fingers in Tampa. Just weird group of people. So it probably doesn't end with John Gruden, but the NFL wants it to. So keep an eye on that story.
How about Tampa making an executive decision and removing John Gruden from its ring of honor?
Man.
John Gruden, of course, who is the head coach for their first Super Bowl championship in the early part of this century. And I feel like, I feel like this move became much easier for them to pull off because of the Super Bowl that they just won.
Oh, see, I never thought of that.
That was
angle.
Their only Super Bowl. There may be more of a conversation that had to be had in order to determine whether or not they're removing Gruden's name. But because they have that other title to lean on, it's an easy decision.
Because now they have two coaches that have won them Super Bowls. Now they have this quarterback that, you know, maybe the greatest that ever played quarterbacking for them. So it's not just about Gruden and Brad Johnson anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought about that angle. But it does bring up that question of kind of the cancel culture discussion. What does it take to get you canceled? And then, you know, at what point do you even think about forgiveness? Can you come back into the fold and all of that? The Bucs are saying, among other things, they're saying, you know, that we have advocated for purposeful change in the areas of race relations, gender equality, diversity, and inclusion for many years. And they go on to, you know, lay all that out. And then we acknowledge his contributions, his actions go against our core values. Therefore, he will no longer continue to be a member of the Buccaneers Ring of Honor. So it's a weird move. Like I heard it yesterday and I thought, well, I hadn't thought of it. I hadn't thought, that's not something I think of as something I would demand,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm one of those guys that I will point out that all these, like when the Reggie Bush Heisman thing happened, I was one of those that would point out that, well, they didn't go after O.J. Simpson's Heisman. Like, he won the Heisman, and you move on. But that's not how they look at it. So, I mean, what's your thought on that? Somebody in the Ring of Honor, somebody who's had their number retired, let's say, you find out, this is basically you finding out that 10 years ago, he proved himself to be a labeler when it comes to certain things. He didn't go on a big diatribe about how he hates other races. In fact, I could argue he wasn't overtly racist at all, if you want to agree with where he with his argument about that nickname or whatever. He didn't go off on homosexuality and how he can't stand it. And how he didn't do that. That's not what happened. There was a word that starts with Q, and there was a word that starts with F and ends in T that probably shouldn't be used in business conversation. I agree with you there. But does that absolutely make him like the most, you know, homophobic, anti-homosexual person that's ever? No, I don't think it does. He and Carl Nassib could have a great relationship. He could have learned a lot in 10 years. But that's not what anybody wants to talk about. Mm-hmm. They just want to talk about, did you see the words? Did you see what he did? Did you see what he said? And the stuff about, look, the stuff about the female officials, little troublesome. The stuff with the cheerleader images and things, little troublesome. But Trey, that's not troublesome to me because of Gruden. That's troublesome to me because they're investigating the Washington franchise for mistreating women. That's why that's puzzling. I mean, troublesome. If you had reason to believe John Gruden was mistreating women in Vegas, okay, that would lead me there. But this feels to me like a bit of an overreaction, but this is just the Buccaneers knowing, I guess, that what, people are going to protest if they don't? Get mad at him if they don't? Like, what would happen if they just left his name up there? Would it be that big a deal?
Yeah, I ultimately, I don't think it would have been that big of a deal, especially in the state of Florida. And in thinking about the various transgressions that led to him stepping down, initially I thought there might be a little bit of nuance with what was being said about Demora Smith, and that may still be the case, but as we talked about yesterday, you lose the benefit of the doubt when some of the other stuff comes out.
You're right about
and
that.
And the most egregious offense to me was not calling Goodell the F word that ends with a T or calling him Pussy Willow minus the Willow. It was referring to Michael Sam and people like Michael Sam as queers.
Yes.
Because at that point, it does become homophobic versus just using words that are very offensive to a lot of people, but using them in a bit more of a nuanced manner than just being able to label that as racist or homophobic or transphobic or whatever other words tend to get put to those words where they weren't being used in that particular way.
Yeah, he kind of, I mean, to me, the way it felt to me was he went Archie Bunker on that email.
Right.
In that era, that he would use that word to describe all homosexual people. In 2020, or in 2011 or 12 or whenever that was.
We can't talk about this too much for a lot of reasons, but we saw a comedian a week and a half ago that had a bit on one of those words and talking about how he used to use it to wish his good friends a happy birthday.
Yes.
So there is, even with the most offensive words, there can be nuance at times. Like when you're talking about an actor, let's say, saying the N-word for the sake of a performance, does that make the actor racist?
Yeah, obviously not.
I don't think so.
Certainly, no. Not saying it in a movie makes them that way.
And John Gruden, well, some could accurately accuse him of performance art at times on some of the Monday Night Football stuff that he would do. This was not necessarily performance art, but it was not. Some of it was not him being overtly whatever, sexist, racist, homophobic, transphobic, whatever other words you want to put on that. The big exception for me is what he said specifically about Michael Sam.
The other,
that's the most inexcusable one to me.
And I could agree with that. I was also a little surprised as I processed it. Like, as much as we know that Davis loves Gruden, as much as we know that he fits with that franchise, and as much as we know that it's 10 years ago, I'm a little surprised that Davis and the Raiders and Gruden didn't take the opportunity to at least try to play the, this was a long time ago, let me tell you how I've changed, and, you know, apologize, totally accept the responsibility for it, but understand, this was me 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. 10 years ago, sending an email to a group of people that included the guy that co-founded Hooters. I get how it looks. I do. But I am telling you, that is not me today, and you know, we've got Carl Nassib on this team, and I've apologized to him, and I would hate for him to think that I would have hateful feelings to, like, the fact that they didn't even try that. Maybe they weren't given the option by the NFL, but to me, there was a little bit of a path where they maybe could have given that an attempt, but it wasn't even, maybe that means there's worse emails out there that they were threatening to throw out if he didn't.
Maybe.
I don't know, but I agree with you. That one was bad because it speaks to, yeah, speaking to that level of insensitivity after the Sam issue, that's tough. And then obviously you don't want anything to make all of the incredible people Gruden's been around in that league that are either black men and women themselves or friends and family and supporters of those people and make them think, wait a minute, Gruden? I mean, he's been around so many influential people of color in that world. Mike Tomlin and Derrick Brooks come to mind as guys he's been around that have been trailblazers.
Right.
And the idea that and Mike Tomlin had a quick little comment on it. He said he was surprised and then didn't really want to talk about it. But, yeah, those kind of things were that makes it really tough. But, yeah, I thought there was a little bit of a path through, but obviously not.
No, there's got to be a full step or two steps maybe even taken away or taken back from John Gruden. I mean, these sides just need to have a clear-cut separation. I think it's part of the reason why Tampa is taking him out of the Ring of Honor, and maybe there is some sort of mending of the relationship down the road, but that's a ways off right now.
Here's the other weird comparison I would make. If you've ever seen this man interviewed, I feel like if Gruden tried to do the apology interview, I think there might be a little Vince McMahon in it. Do you know
like
what I mean?
Like a qualified apology?
Like that belligerence that Vince can have in interviews. Mm. When it's like you're trying to get him to do the mea culpa, you're trying to get him to show real human emotion, and all he does is fire back at you.
Right.
It's like, wait, what dude, I'm trying to let you apologize here. What are you doing?
I'd like to think that Gruden could be a little bit more humble given the opportunity, but you never know. I mean, he is a pretty brash dude.
He is.
He has a hard time hiding how he truly feels about something, so he could, deep down, just think that we're all acting like a bunch of peas for how we're reacting to this.
I guess so. By the way, you'll get the Bucks get a week to figure that out since they are at Philadelphia tomorrow night. They'll have a week to get the John Gruden name off of the Ring of Honor if they have a home game next week. I haven't even checked the schedule for that. But they don't have one this week, so they'll get a little extra time to deal with that. So John Gruden coming off the Ring of Honor for the Bucks. Up next, speaking of Rings of Honor, I'll talk about two guys that are definitely Ring of Honor worthy. They may even be goat of all goats worthy in their worlds. They both have birthdays today, and I'll talk about them. Plus, at 105, it's our weekly conversation with Justin Wells of Inside Texas and On3.com. What did he see when the Longhorns faced the Sooners that affects the way he looks at the Longhorns and the Cowboys? We will talk about it coming up on The Horn.
Shirts and skins.
Catchy-ass hook that is.
Yeah.
What is this, Trey?
M83 is the name of the band, and the song is called Midnight City.
I have definitely heard that song before. That is such a memorable hook.
Mm-hmm.
Good for them. The Strokes and M83 so far today. Little indie rock playlist that Trey has found. We hope you are having a great Wednesday getting ready for Texas and Oklahoma State. It is an 11 o'clock kick, of course, on Saturday morning, which means we'll crank up Bevo Boulevard and the Texas Tail Garden at 7 a.m. Aaron Rod will be over at 17th and San Jacinto. Bucky and myself will be on Bevo Boulevard right there around Gate 2. And it's another nice midday edition of the postgame for Kevin and Trey. Don't have to worry about being up super late. Don't have to worry about the callers being too hammered. Unless Oklahoma State wins the game by a lot.
No, I'd like to challenge the people out there. I want you to be super, super hammered by 3, 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Is that what you're looking for?
Not really.
No, no.
Don't take my words to heart.
1 hour after the game, the guys will get you the post game, so be sure to check it all out here on The Horn, over on Coke FM, all across the Austin Radio Network. Take those apps with you so you can listen crystal clear wherever you are. All right, let's get into the crab bag. We got some big sports birthdays today. Here we go.
Chad's crap bag.
Crap bag. If you need an easy way to remember it, just think of a bag of crap.
All right. Brought to you by AV Consultations, 255-8678, 255-8678, or go to avconsultations.com. Trey, did I hear a rumor that maybe Tom McKay is going to be breaking down some sports on this show at some point?
Yeah.
Is that happening?
He's still cool with it in a couple of days. We're going to have him on Friday at 12:30 to talk a little hockey, give his prediction on what he thinks is going to happen in the NHL this season, prognostication on the Dallas Stars, and also promote the start of the Texas Stars season,
there
Chad.
There you go.
It's going this Saturday and Sunday. It is legitimately one of my family's favorite things to do throughout the year is go to a Texas Stars game. Thankfully, we normally get to see Tom as part of that process. My kids love Tom, and you will as well if you get a chance to meet him after giving Audiovisual Consultations a call to have them hook you up with that dream home theater setup.
Yeah, Texas Stars games are a lot of fun. This is that time of year where I'm about to lose my man Rick Sacamano. He digs in. He's been a season ticket holder since day one, just like Tom McKay has. And he stops calling me about football. Funny how that works when those Texas Stars games fire up.
But the hockey hardcores, man, they
love
no
it.
Joke.
They love it. Since this is the crap bag, I will mention those Seattle Kraken uniforms do look badass. The logo's badass. I like the colors that pop just right. They look really good. We'll see what the home stuff looks like, but they put up a fight against Vegas last night. All right, here are your happy birthdays. We can argue each of them may be the GOAT. They're certainly one of the GOATs in their world. The first one is a GOAT I have to respect, even though he's not on one of my teams. And that is the great Jerry Rice. Jerry is 59 years old today, and I guarantee you he can still run those routes, still make those catches, and he's probably still in better shape than, 85% of humans. So Jerry went to Mississippi Valley State.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a kid, I can recall the moment when I saw that team. They were never on actual television, but they showed a highlight. And my dad says, Chad, look at the screen. Look at that. And they had four receivers lined up on the left side in a single file line.
Huh.
And I'd never seen that. I'm assuming it was an empty, like a 4x1 is probably what they were running. And this is like mid-80s that they're doing this at Mississippi Valley State. Jerry obviously goes on to be what I would tell you is the greatest receiver that ever played. I don't think that's in question. I know there are some Moss discussions and some other guys, maybe a couple others, but I think we're still in that world, right? Jerry Rice is the greatest receiver that ever lived, yes?
Domination and Super Bowl titles? Yeah, I think so.
He's unbelievable. Just how smooth he was, effortlessness. He was the first guy that I would say appeared to do what he did without sweating. I didn't think Jerry was sweating at all. So
he still owns the yardage and the receptions record, correct?
I think so.
Okay.
I think he's got at least those two things. So that's one Jerry who I would say is the GOAT that has a birthday. This other Jerry, I don't think he's the GOAT of what he does, but he's probably in the discussion because Jerry Jones is 79 years old today. I don't think he's the greatest owner of all time, but you can't have that discussion, Hall of Fame owners, just the owner part, without talking about Jerry. Clearly he's got his flaws, but Jerry certainly is a superstar, and he's in the Hall of Fame now. And for those folks at the Star that see him every single day, I'm here to remind you, Grandpa is now 79. He drinks more Johnny Walker Blue than I drink sparkling water. And he is the GM and he is the president and he does two radio shows a week. And Trey, we just watched a head coach in his late 50s in the NFL do something 10 years ago, send an email that got him in trouble to the point where he felt like he needed to resign. I'll keep asking it this way. All y'all in Frisco, Steven, everybody. Are y'all going to wait for him to say it? Are y'all going to wait for somebody to catch him on an email or a text? Or are you going to figure out a way to get the keys away? That's all I'm wondering. Because I think Jerry's that type that it'll end like the Carolina guy ended. It'll end with a weird investigation. It'll end with strange comments. It'll be like, Jerry called him what? I think that's how it ends if they don't get a hold of this thing.
Hmm. That's a great question. I mean, they've tried to get Jerry before. There were some pictures that surfaced a few years ago of him.
Yep, you're right.
Groping some young ladies that he was hanging out with that were clearly not his wife. They looked more like his granddaughters than anything else. Jerry's a bit more immune than John Gruden is.
He is. You're right. There's a little Teflon quality to it.
I mean, look, Roberto Kraft got caught going to massage parlors to play with the hands team, and nothing happened to him. I have a hard time believing something would come out about Jerry that would force him to sell.
If there was a video, if there'd been a video of Kraft, I think that could have been different. There's a video of him entering the facility. If there's a video of what was going on there, they got that thrown out, and that may have been what saved him. But you're right. Maybe there's a little Teflon with Jerry. But happy birthday to Jerry, 79. And you know what? Right now, those people like me that like to criticize Jerry and the way he runs that thing, that's a damn good football team right now.
Yeah, but they did hire Mike McCarthy as the head coach, and that has yet to really become a problem.
They're looking good.
A really good football team.
They're 4-1, but so far they've beaten two teams in the division they're supposed to beat. They beat a Carolina team that was pretty good. They beat a Chargers team that actually looks really good, and they should have, you could argue, should have beaten the defending champs as well if they handle some business. We'll see what they do against New England, but today should be a fun day in Frisco. What does Jerry do for his birthday when he turns 79? So happy birthday to both Jerrys, both Jones and Rice. You could argue they are in the GOAT discussions of their respective fields.
I think we know what Jerry's going to do.
Johnny Walker Blue.
I want me some glory hope.
There it is. There it is. We'll just leave that one there. Coming up next, not only a Longhorn fan, but a Cowboys fan as well. Justin Wells of Inside Texas. We had that nice run of, two straight weeks where Longhorns and Cowboys looking great. Yeah, not so much last week. We'll get Justin's thoughts on what happened against OU and what he thinks of this Oklahoma State team, and we might mix in a Cowboys thought on Jerry Jones' birthday. Also coming up at 1:30, looks kind of like an ugly week in college football, but that can always bring the best theater. We'll set it up for you coming up on the Horn.